ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Text number 19, I thought we were doing that. 20?
Yeah, it's written over here, 20.
Chapter 4, chapter entitled, Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe. Text number 19. Sa itam nirjita kukub. Sa itam nirjita kukub. Ekarad vishayan priyan. Ekarad vishayan priyan. Yato pajo sambunjano. Yato pajo sambunjano. Nat prayad achitendriya. Nat prayad achitendriya. So, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. In spite of achieving the power to control in all directions, and in spite of enjoying all types of dear sense gratification, as much as possible, Hiranyakashipu was dissatisfied, because instead of controlling his senses, he remained their servant. Purport. This is an example of asuric life. Atheists can advance materially and create an extremely comfortable situation for the senses, but because they are controlled by the senses, they cannot be satisfied. This is the effect of modern civilization. Materialists are very much advanced in enjoying money and women, yet dissatisfaction prevails within human society, because human society cannot be happy and peaceful without Krishna consciousness. As far as material sense gratification is concerned, materialists may go on increasing their enjoyment as far as they can imagine, but because people in such a material condition are servants of their senses, they cannot be satisfied. Hiranyakashipu was a vivid example of this dissatisfied state of humanity. Blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas here. We'll try to discuss about this on this purport of Srila Prabhupada. So we see from this pastime of Hiranyakashipu how easy it is to be engulfed by Maya, material nature. In one sense, Hiranyakashipu is a very great soul. When Hiranyaksha was killed, and his mother Diti and Hiranyaksha's wife Rushabhanu were in such distress, it was Hiranyakashipu who went and consoled them. And hearing him speak the philosophy, it was as if he was giving a Bhagavatam class. It was so detailed and informative about how one should not be attached to this body, because one is not this body, one is a spirit soul. And eventually all of us have to die, this material body has to die, and the transmigration process. So it was as if he was giving a Bhagavad Gita class. But then, immediately after that, after his relatives were pacified, Hiranyakashipu decided to become immortal. And he performed such great austerities, inconceivable and unimaginable by any person in this material world. Standing on the tips of his toes for 100 celestial years. It's mind-boggling how a person could do so much of austerities. But nevertheless, his sole aim was to become immortal. But then, Lord Brahma appeared before him and expressed to him that he could not grant him the boon of becoming immortal. So Hiranyakashipu thought that he was very smart and started asking for all sorts of various permutations and combinations by which he could effectively not be killed. And then now one sees that Hiranyakashipu goes about in this particular shloka satisfying his, or trying to satisfy his senses to such an extent, but still he remains dissatisfied because he was the servant of the senses. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport writes so nicely that materialists are so much advanced in enjoying money and women, yet dissatisfaction prevails within human society, because human society cannot be happy and peaceful without Krishna consciousness. So before we came into Krishna consciousness, the goal of life was to make money. And practically 99.99% of people in this material world, they just want to make money, because money is sweeter than honey. And why is money sweeter than honey? Because honey satisfies only one sense, the tongue, whereas money has the ability to satisfy all the five senses. So somehow or the other, we have to acquire vast quantities of money. And the fallacy of this human nature is that whatever we may acquire, however much we may acquire, still it is short. So we find that there are people who are having such huge quantities of money, which is, even if they have a very, very lavish lifestyle, it is adequate for them for 100 generations or maybe even more. But still they are not satisfied. They want to earn more money. They want to earn more money. And in the world scenario, the global scenario, one sees that some of the rich men of the world are so rich, yet they are completely dissatisfied. So the pages of Bhagavatam reveal to us that however much we may try to satisfy our senses, because ultimately money also satisfies one very important aspect, which is our false pride. The more money we have, the more people are envious of us. And the more people are envious of us, the more our false pride increases. And they are directly correlated. So a devotee never wants to display his wealth, because he knows that that would be an object of envy. Whereas for a materialist, for him to display his wealth is the goal of his life. Even though he may have nothing, still he will try his level best to display or show off whatever he has. So that is why you will find that in a marriage, irrespective of whether you have money or no money, you still want to show off as if you have money. To the extent that people take loans in order to get their children married. And these loans they repay for generations together. In fact, the other day, one of the devotees from the temple who hails from Bihar and who will be going to his native place, he was telling me that every year there is a marriage that is there in his family. Every year. So either his sisters or his uncle's sisters or auntie's sisters. So invariably there is a marriage that takes place in the family every year. And for each of these marriages, there is money that has to be given, there is expenses that have to be incurred. And he comes from a very poor background, so invariably he has to borrow money. And then he borrows money for a year, returns it, and then by the time he repays the final installment, the next marriage has come. And again he has to borrow money. And so on and so forth. So invariably his whole life, and the life of his father, the life of his grandfather, has been like this only. Month after month after month, they are just paying the loan and the interest. And there is no hope in sight. There is never a situation where they are debt free. Because of this propensity to show off, we would like to portray or we would like to present ourselves much more wealthier than what we actually are. And in fact, once when I was traveling from Bombay to Nasik, and this was a late evening train, there was a Marwari gentleman who was traveling in the same coach. And this person was pretty much intoxicated. So one could see that he was a very successful businessman. So I started talking to him. And he was telling me that he's actually from Jalgaon. He was going to Jalgaon. He was a very big businessman over there. And he was telling me that I'm actually going now and I'm about to start preparing for my daughter's marriage. And he said that in a Marwari community, I don't know whether it is true or not, maybe some of the Marwadis here could certify whether it's true. He said there are two things for which a Marwadi spends his whole life for. One is to construct a house, and the second is to get his daughter married. So, and for both the things, he was saying that there is always a 30% shortage of money. So I was not able to understand what he said. So he said that, for example, if a Marwadi has a crore of rupees available with him, he will construct a house of 1.5 crores. If he has 5 crores with him, he will construct a house of 7 crores. If he has got 10 crores with him, he will construct a house of 15 crores. So always there is a situation where he has to take a loan. So whatever may be his financial standing, he has to take a loan for the balance 30%. So he always stretches himself for that remaining 30%. And same thing happens in the case of his daughter's marriage also. So he was explaining to me that however wealthy a person might be, at the end of the day, after he has finished constructing his house and after he gets his daughters married, he's broke. So this is all because of this innate propensity within us to display our wealth much more than what we actually have, even to the extent of taking a loan. So this materialistic society respects or adores a person who is wealthy. And in fact, the whole material nature is arranged in such a way that there is a very great emphasis that is put on possessing material objects. In fact, there is a newspaper which is a very well-known newspaper, and every Saturday they bring out some supplementary pages. And the heading of that supplementary pages is Objects of Desire. And they will present in that paper such fantastic items that are available out in the market. Very, very expensive. Like I was reading this paper once, and there is a jeweled cell phone. So a cell phone is a cell phone. It's a cell phone. But then you get jeweled cell phones. And this jeweled cell phone has got approximately some 5 or 6 carats of diamonds embedded in it. And this cell phone costs, you won't believe it, 40 lakhs of rupees. Who would ever want to buy such a cell phone? But there are people buying it. 40 lakhs of rupees, that's approximately $100,000. And so many different articles of sense gratification. Somehow or the other, they tempt people to buy all these objects. So if they possess such an object, then they are respected in society. In fact, the whole advertising industry is based only on this particular aspect of greed. Somehow or the other, tempting a person to gratify his senses. And today the retail industry, what we see, huge supermarkets. One goes to the west, it's not caught on so much in India. We started off with what was called as a mini market in the western country about 20, 25, 30 years back. There was what was called as a mini market, which basically it started off as a small grocery store, but then it expanded so that you could get so many other things also in it. And then after that it became a supermarket. And today there are what are called as hypermarkets. It's meant for hyper people to go and spend the whole day over there. And literally these hypermarkets are so huge. They're so huge. that you could spend a whole day over there and still not complete all the things that are displayed over there on the shelves. Some of these hypermarkets stretch over blocks. And since the last 2-3 years, these hypermarkets are open 24 hours of the day. Can you believe it? A shop open for 24 hours. It's actually a shop. What we would say a grocery kirana, next door grocery kirana, is open 24 hours of the day. And I was actually flabbergasted to think, how is it that somebody could be shopping at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning? And so one day when we were returning back from a program in Detroit, so the devotee who was with us decided to buy something in a supermarket. And this was around 11 o'clock in the evening. And we were returning back home. So we went to the supermarket, which is open 24 hours. And literally, I was shocked to see there were so many people just going around at 11 o'clock in the evening. And I'm sure even if you go there at 2 o'clock in the morning, which is not a saint time for a devotee to be in such a place. But if you go to such a place, I'm sure that will be teeming with people. And even the attendants, they were so fresh. They were looking so energetic and fresh. Because they have a system that a salesman changes every 4 hours. So this is called as a part-time jobs in America and also in Europe. People work for just 4 hours, 20 hours a week. So you work in a supermarket for 4 hours. So effectively what it means is that the supermarkets have 6 changes of people in a day of 24 hours. So the people are always fresh. They are looking so energetic. Even if you go at 2 o'clock in the morning, they are welcoming you and receiving you. But still, even though the supermarkets may be so big, and there is so much of merchandise for you to see and select and buy, for an average Indian, it is actually so impersonal. Because we are used to our neighborhood kirana store. That fellow knows you by name. Right? You know him by name. You know what are the things that he sells. You know the rates, what are the rates of the things that he sells. This is that personal relationship, which is so important for satisfying a person's heart. I remember the first time we shifted to Prabhadevi, this was about 10 years back, or 12 years back. We had visited a shop in order to make some purchases. And the moment we entered in, the grocer came to us and started making light conversation. So he said, have you come here new, and when did you come, and what's your name, like that. And I was really pleasantly surprised that the next time when I went into the store, he remembered, he called me out by name. Said, Mr. Iyer, so happy to see you. Please come. Such a personal relationship. And later on I came to know that this person actually had a camera in his shop. So he would take all the new customers close to that camera, and you would not know it, but then he would take a photograph of you. And then he would put your photograph in a computer. And then gradually you'd find more and more particulars about you. First you'd find out your name. Then you'd find out about your family, your wife, your children, where they are going. And all this he would feed into the computer. And then he would keep meditating on it. So that whenever the customer came, he would address the customer by his name. He would ask him about his family. He would ask him about his children. Yeah. The key to success lies in how you develop personal relationship, even in Krishna consciousness. And he was really doing it very, very nicely. Every time I would visit the shop, he would be asking me for newer and newer information. And I, without realizing what he was asking and why he was asking for, I would share it with him. And next time he would ask me the same questions. How's your family? How are your children? How's your son? Now, how is he finding his school? How are your neighbors? So this is what makes the whole process so attractive. Relationship. The supermarket, everything is so impersonal. They don't care whether you come and go, what you buy. In fact, if you're not able to find a particular thing and you go to one of the salesmen over there and ask him, that please tell me what where this particular thing is. He'll tell you row number X and something, X20 or something like that. Then you have to go searching around, where is this X20? Well, that you spend about half an hour. And effectively, most of the people who are seen going around are basically searching for things. All the time they are moving around, searching for things. And the most pathetic state of the supermarkets is the old people. You'll see these old people coming into the supermarket right in the morning. The moment they finish their morning duties, they come into the supermarket. And then whole day they spend in the supermarket. They go home at night. And invariably we would find there are so many old people in the supermarket, and one would wonder, why is it so? And then we came to know what it was, what is the reason. Basically, these old people in the Western countries are very, very lonely. They are not like the old people here. We look after them, they are staying with us, you know, they interact so much. But in the Western countries, you have these old age homes, yeah, where the father and the mother or one of them, they go over there with their dogs, cats or whatever. And they just left to themselves. And maybe once in a year, their son or their daughter may just telephone them, you know, wishing them happy Mother's Day, happy Father's Day or whatever. Right. And that's all. That's the only interaction the children have with their parents. So the parents, they have good health, even for that age, 75, 80 years of age. But still they have reasonably good health. They are well taken care of medically. They have good medicines, vitamins and so on. And they're quite hale and hearty. So, they have to spend time. And how can you spend time? How long can you watch the television? Yeah. So, just in order to get over the boredom, they come to the supermarket. They may not buy anything, and invariably they don't buy anything. But, they're just there. Right from morning till evening. Just to get off. Because they feel, you know, that they are part of a crowd. They feel that sense of belonging. That there is somebody around them. They feel so nice about it. And it is true. Any one of us, if we were to be just in one single room, apartment, 24 hours of the day, without anybody being near us or being with us, things would be so horrible. Day in and day out. And they don't know how long this is going to continue. So just in order to relieve themselves of the boredom, they come to the supermarket. And then they come, they have their breakfast over there, they have their lunch over there, they have their dinner over there. And then at the end of the day, they go back. And then again, the next day morning, they come back. It's a really sad state of affairs. How these old people are actually killing their time. Which could be used so productively. So we see that great souls, they have understood that this material nature is, and the opulences that go along with it, are not meant for a human being who is on the path of spiritual realization. So we see from the life of Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Maharaj Priyavrat. Now, Maharaj Priyavrat actually was the heir to the throne. Swayambhu of Manu was his father. His brother was Uttanapad. But then he met Narad Muni and he renounced and went to the forest. And then Maharaj Uttanapad took over, and then after that Dhruva Maharaj. And then after Dhruva Maharaj, when there was nobody to take over, at that time, Swayambhu Manu went to request Priyavrat Maharaj to come and take over, to become the king of the universe. But then Priyavrat Maharaj declined and told his father that I am better off situated where I am. I don't know what will be my condition if I get involved with material nature. So just leave me where I am. And then Swayambhu Manu had to invite Brahma to actually come and talk to Priyavrat Maharaj. And then when Brahma came, then Priyavrat Maharaj realized that he should actually obey the instructions of his grandfather. And then he ruled the kingdom for 1 billion, 100 million years. That is a very, very long lifespan for a person to be the king. But then at the end, he regretted that he had actually spent so much of time, which could have been actually used in spiritual pursuit. And then he retired into the forest. Raghunath Das Goswami came from a family which was so wealthy. 12 lakh gold coins per year was the income. But yet he was so much attracted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that his mother, that he kept going again and again to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the guards would go and bring him back. And his mother was telling the father that, "Now I think we should tie up our son." And Raghunath Das Goswami's father told his mother that, you know, if all the wealth that we own and such a beautiful wife cannot tie down Raghunath Das Goswami, how can you ever think of tying him down with ropes? So the scriptures teach us how important it is for us to understand through the lives of Hiranyakashipu. He had everything, but yet he was so dissatisfied. Mother Devahuti, she had everything. Although she was married to Kardama Muni and she was living as an ascetic in the forest, when the time came when she requested Kardama Muni for a son, Kardama Muni, by his mystic power, created an aerial mansion. Now this aerial mansion, we can't even imagine a mansion, but an aerial mansion which could move at the speed of the mind. And it had in it every conceivable object of desire. It had lakes, it had palaces, and the palaces were decked with gold and precious stones. It had fountains and waterfalls and gardens, and practically it was a city that could just move about from one place to another place at will. Thousands of maid servants. And Kardama Muni and Devahuti, they traveled in this for thousands of years, just moving from one place to another place. And yet at the end of it, once Lord Kapila was born, then Kardama Muni said that, "I am going back to the forest. I don't want to have anything more to do with this." And Mother Devahuti is inquiring from Lord Kapila, asking him to tell about this calamities of birth and death, so that one can become a bit detached from this material world. Now these are the questions that are actually relevant. Just like Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami, what is the duty of a person who is about to die? These are really relevant questions. Like Mother Devahuti is asking Lord Kapila, "Please discuss about the calamities of birth and death so that we may become detached from this material world." So these are genuine questions which are actually of importance to all of us, to everybody. Most people don't want to discuss about this. 99.9% of the people will not like to discuss about death or disease or old age. This is something that is completely non-discussable. But for a devotee, we would like to discuss about this more and more. And in fact, the third canto is about the discussions between Lord Kapila and Mother Devahuti. The most important aspect of the third canto is the discussions between Lord Kapila and Devahuti. And then after Lord Kapila tells about how a living entity who gratifies his senses meets such an abominable death, surrounded by his family members, not able to speak, words like Guru Guru come out from his throat, and he dies a very lamentable death. And then he goes to the hellish planets, where depending upon the activities that he has done in this material world, he has to get so many punishments. And then he takes birth once again in the womb of a mother. And if he's fortunate, then he remembers actually 100 births of his. Lord Kapila explains also the condition of the baby in the womb of his mother. What a horrible situation. Being burned by the gastric juices, being bitten by the worms, back arched like a bow in the amnion fluid. Vivid description of how the living entity suffers right from the time when it is actually in the womb of its mother. And then it comes out. And because of the pressure of childbirth is so intense, its memory is washed away. And although in the womb of its mother, it is actually praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead that, "My dear Lord, please save me. I've had enough of this." Yet when it comes out, it completely forgets everything and goes back into enjoying this material world to the best of its ability, and again goes into the cycle of birth and death. So the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam give us very, very vividly, and by reading it and by hearing about it, we understand the futility of trying to enjoy your material senses. Although even a materialist, although he doesn't want to accept it, still he knows that trying to enjoy his senses is futile. He doesn't want to accept it. He knows so. How long can you enjoy? There is a limit. But still he doesn't want to accept it. But in the case of a devotee, because we have this knowledge which is given to us by Sukadev Goswami, by the Acharyas, we are in a position to discriminate and realize that actually what we need to do is to hear more about what Devahuti wants to hear from Lord Kapila. And once we do that, then we become properly fixed up in our consciousness, at least for that particular day. And then the next day again we hear, and the next day again we hear. So Srila Prabhupada has given us this Bhagavatam classes every day in the morning, only for that reason. So that every day we are able to refresh our consciousness that this material world is a miserable place. Again and again, we are being told through the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And just in order to reinforce this particular fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam, at the end, after Lord Kapila goes to the forest, then we see how Devahuti, she continues in the ashram of Kardama Muni, and which is situated on the banks of the river Saraswati. And this particular place is so opulent. It's so beautiful. Yet, and if Devahuti, Mother Devahuti wanted, she could have made her life so comfortable after that. But then she realized that that was not the goal of her life, to make or to stay over there in a comfortable situation. She started performing such austerities that her hair started turning grey. She used to have 3 times cold water bath, and she became emaciated. And she had, although she had thousands of maid servants who were attending to her, the Vidyadharas, still, she performed all these austerities. And finally, her body just merged into the water, melted into the water. Such intense austerities were performed by Mother Devahuti, although she could have lived in a very comfortable situation. So Hiranyakashipu, although he had the knowledge, he knew that he was not this body, he was a spirit soul. Still, once he got the facilities to enjoy, he could not resist it. And he was somehow or the other trying to enjoy his body. If he had the association of devotees, then Hiranyakashipu would have had the realization that this is not what he should be doing. Just because I'm having the facilities doesn't mean that I should be enjoying. Mother Devahuti was in a similar situation like Hiranyakashipu. She had all the facilities. If she wanted, she could have enjoyed. But then she knew that this human form of life, this human body is not meant for this particular thing. It is meant for austerity. It is meant for tapasya. The final goal of this human form of life is to go home back to Godhead. Whereas for Hiranyakashipu, the final goal of this human form of life, when he became practically immortal, was to try and enjoy his senses. So, this is a lesson actually for all of us, that even though we might be having the knowledge, if we have material opulences, there is such a great chance that we could get attached to them. unless and until we are in the association of devotees, until and unless we are hearing from renounced souls and trying and assimilating that in our life, there is such a great chance that we will also get attached. And sometimes Krishna actually gives you material opulences to test whether you are really using it for your sense gratification or using it in Krishna's service. So that is the time when we really, and most times, in fact, most people, they worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead or any of the demigods only to get material opulences. Right? And once they get the material opulences, you know, tata to the god or whatever.
They're no more
needing him or her. So even when a person comes and worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still, and he gets the material opulences. So that is a true test, whether a person has finally understood the message of the scriptures. Unlike Hiranyakashipu, yes, there are material opulences, but still we have to be using them in the service of the Lord, and we have to be detached. So you have both the situations in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of Hiranyakashipu and one of devotees like Mother Devahuti, and of course Chaitanya Charitamrita, where we have such great souls like Sanatana Rupa Goswami, was so rich and yet they renounced everything to be sleeping under a different tree every night. Right? Because they realized Sanatana Goswami actually had this money, you know, and which he had actually kept it in the garbage, along with the garbage. So, and only when we hear about these great souls from other great souls do we really appreciate the value, the true value of Srimad Bhagavatam, the true value of the scriptures. So Hiranyakashipu is very, very unfortunate. He has a glorious opportunity, practically immortal, to be perfecting his life, but yet he is spending it engaged in sense gratification. Which is dissatisfying. The Bhagavatam says, Hiranyakashipu was dissatisfied because instead of controlling his senses, he remained their servant. Thank you very much. You're already over time. 9:20. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.